So we start hour number three, and what I'm constantly looking to do on this show and on my various podcasts, I'm looking to tell stories and get people on who have stories, unique stories, different stories. And that story that you just heard is an all-timer. Daniel Ponce de Leon of the Cardinals. So I want to react to that in a minute. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Constantly looking for the best stories and stories that maybe you don't know. Jim, thank you for the Daniel Ponce de Leon interview. His story is amazing and an inspiration to us all. Even if I weren't a Cardinals fan, I would love the guy. See, exactly. That's really interesting. Vincent, Illinois. I thought that was like when James Conner came on earlier today and he said that he sees people wearing his jersey and they're not Steeler fans or Arizona Cardinal fans, but they're inspired by him. So you have two athletes who are a tremendous inspiration, and not because of how far they can hit the ball or how hard they can throw it or what their time in the 40 is, but because they've what they've overcome and the fact that they represent something much larger than themselves. It's pretty awesome. Huge inspirations. J.P. Emmett is in. Great interview with Daniel Ponce de Leon. He was quite a discovery out of school, so major credit to that scout. Four times drafted means he explored a lot of options. And leaving Cali for Florida and Arizona for school made him quite the adventurer as well. This guy truly is a pioneer. It's actually very well said. I want to go back to the conversation I had with him. This is a guy that got drafted four times by four different schools, had a scholarship ripped from him after the school told him, this is our plan for you next year. He had a signing bonus ripped from him after that MRI. And then he got banned by the NCAA. And then the guy just kept going. And then hit with a line drive that could have cost him his life. Dear Jim, the only thing worse than seeing my neighbor at McDonald's is seeing him occupying our shared patio. Signed, townhome guy. This guy signs it, Brett in Bugahaw, rangy. Yeah, Brett, because you have takes for days. Yeah, Brett, because you have so much range. You're the kind of guy, Brett, who pulls up at the metaphorical logo, right, and just knocks it down because you got range for days. Mr. Rome, I still cannot get over that pink tie with the purple polo worn by Ritt. If somebody wears that non-ironically, they truly are a psychopath. And Ritt, dead-ass serious, thought that he looked good. He thought he was a professional and polished in that absolutely ridiculous outfit. Ritt has a family, right? A wife and children. And somebody let him leave the house like that? Poor old fella literally has no one looking out for his best interest. Earnestly, Ernesto Z in Las Vegas. Can't really refute any of that, Ritt. That's all true. Dear Rome, Ben Askren saying that he's good either way because he's getting paid means he doesn't care about wins or losses. He just wants to cash checks. San Francis and Glendale. War IRA Craig using croissants as MMA gloves. Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of him not caring. He's putting in the work. I think he's just pragmatic. He's just being realistic. What he's saying is, I've never boxed before professionally. And even when I was in MMA, striking was probably the worst part of my game. This is not what I do. This is not where I live. They came to me and they said, we're willing to give you this amount of money. Are you willing to do it? When I saw the offer, I said yes, because I'm getting paid more for this exhibition than any fight I've ever had in my life. That doesn't mean he doesn't care. It doesn't mean that he's not competitive. It doesn't mean that he only cares about the money. Of course he cares about the money. He should care about the money. If you were a professional mixed martial artist and you retired and somebody came to you and said, hey man, you want to fight this YouTube celebrity? You want to box this guy for eight rounds with 10-ounce gloves instead of 4-ounce gloves, and we'll pay you more money than you ever got in the octagon? Are you interested? Of course he said yes. It doesn't mean he doesn't care. Yeah, I guarantee the guy doesn't want to lose. I guarantee the guy does not want to be embarrassed. What he's not saying is, I don't give a damn what happens. I'm getting paid. That's all that matters. What he's saying is, I could get my ass kicked. I might kick his ass. Either way, I'm going to make more money for that exhibition than any fight I've ever had. I mean, like, I respect it. If I thought the guy didn't give a damn, I wouldn't watch it. If I thought the guy wasn't going to be competitive, I wouldn't give them my money. It ain't cheap. I think it's $50. I think. And look, I'm not going to guarantee that we're going to be happy. But they've got my attention. And part of the reason is the guy. The guy, man, he's funny. You want to make your way to this podcast if you missed it. Like, to reset what Bella B said. Bella B said, I'm a fan of UFC. And that said, I didn't really know this guy. I thought the guy was a butthole. But he's not. He's really funny. And I hope he kicks the other guy's ass. He is funny. He's really funny, and he's got this unbelievable insight and mindset about how to deal with something bad that happened, namely that flying knee from Jorge Masvidal. He said, I've turned the page. I've got this. I'm turning it into a teachable moment. He said, the problem is not what happened to me. The problem is Masvidal himself will not stop reliving that great moment for him.
He just won't get over it. It's like, yeah, George, you've been gloating about this for 2 years. Like, don't you have anything else going on in your life? Like, get over it, you know? I mean, if you want to brag on this one event for the next decade, or what are you going to do with this? And that's really it. And then I guess the second part of that would be he has this fourth grader mentality of like might is right. And he's like, oh, if you don't say anything he likes, like, oh, I'm going to beat you up. Wait till I see you next time. It's like, you already knocked me out. Like, it can't really get much worse than that. I guess you can try to beat me up again if you want to. But it's just such like a fourth grade mentality.
Yes and no. I mean, yes. But Masvidal, there's a lot more to Masvidal than him being a fourth grader. You know, I've had him on this show. We've talked about his backstory. The fact that he came up fighting, literally fighting in backyards, in the streets of Miami. They would fight for McDonald's. They would fight for whatever action they could scratch up. And then Masvidal was just kind of a journeyman, kind of a run-of-the-mill guy. And then he went off the grid for about a year, and then he came back and somehow magically transformed himself into the fighter of the year. And one of the reasons why he was the fighter of the year was that knee. But Ben is really hilarious in the way he says, oh, I'm going to come beat you up. You already did.
See you next time. It's like,
Let me tell you something else about Askren and who this guy is and what he's about. He was a wrestler on another level completely. This dude, for you to come in here and say, man, he just doesn't care. All he wants is to get paid. You got to understand about this guy. Dude, this guy's competitiveness and his drive and his grit and his toughness are off the charts. The guy is an Olympian. He probably could have won a gold medal had he not left for MMA. MMA, where he dominated some really badass dudes. All right, so to say that he doesn't care and he's not competitive and he's only doing it for the money really isn't fair to the guy. It's just not accurate. But yes, of course, he's doing it in part for the money. There's nothing wrong with that. Jared Enskonson, quote, the guy ripping Askren about the paycheck is also the guy who gets pissed when a player won't take a, quote, hometown discount. I mean, why wouldn't he take this? He's fighting a YouTube celebrity for more money than he ever made to fight train killers. It's a no-brainer, right? And to his other point, how could I be any more embarrassed than I was than when I went to sleep after a 5-second knee? Mike D for three tweets, Ponce de Leon is an inspiration. Thank you for that interview, Rome. Signed, Magellan, Columbus, Vespucci, and Hudson. But Lewis and Clark didn't want any of that. Marco Polo's got nothing to add to this conversation. Dude's got a great name. He's got a great name and a better story. Daniel Ponce de Leon. Still ahead, I've got Landon Dickerson. Let's go to the phones here in Southern California. Fabian showing up in the jungle. Fabian, what's up, dog?
Good morning, Rome. Oh, man. Here, let me start reading. Blah, blah. Hey, dude. Good to hear. Hey, you know what? I want to tell you a little something. Actually, I bounce all over the place, right? But this one, I want to kick it out because I don't know how familiar you are with that 5150 thing, but your boy was one of them cats, you know? So the jungle, it was like, you know, you got to talk to these cats and stuff, you know? And they got to make sure you have a good supporting, you know, group around you and the whole deal, man. Pow! Through the jungle, that ass, boom. And they're like, all right, get out of here, dude. So anyways, I don't know. For some reason, I want to get that off my chest and stuff. Rich knows about that and Bella B and all these cats, but like, the hell. So there's like this one fight, or actually not a fight. It's just like this youngster, the Gavin dude, you know, trying to get at you know, old clones, you know. I just kicked 51, so I'm like, you know, youngster, I cannot slap you because I go to jail, you know. So I was like, you know, I was talking to Manny in Oxnard, and I'm like, dude, you got to just get the Mets fan. Oof, I almost messed up. This group of dudes, it's just like back in the day, you know, somebody used to get hurt, call the minors, bring some dude up. Whatever the dude was,
they would fit right in,
man. And it was just beautiful, you know? And I just feel like we're
going to,
like, be kicking ass.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like
actually,
that
Fabian,
call.
That was a good call.
Not a very good call.
The quality of the call was trailing off. That's why we had to do you like that, because I was having trouble understanding you. Well, even when the signal was right, I was having trouble understanding you. My man, you were all over the map, even for you. But I did pick up on bits and pieces. Part of that being that you're now 51, and that Gavin is 16. And him coming after the boomers makes you want to slap him. But you know that as a 51-year-old, if you slap that teenager, you're going to jail. So you can't do that. That much I did get.
Okay.
Fabian, you know, doing Fabian things, you know?
Yeah.
Gavin was the 16-year-old from Illinois that came in, took a run at Ritt, they had beef, and it went pretty well for a little while for Gavin, and then it went terribly for him, and we may never see or hear from him ever again. At least no time soon. Then again, Fabian, my man, I know what you're capable of. I got a fist bump from you. That fist bump felt like you were rocking brass knuckles. Do not let your fist meet his face, or they will put you in jail.
Yeah.
I know what kind of damage that guy's capable of doing with fist bumps alone. For the ones who get it done, Grainger is offering supplies and solutions for every industry, backed by 24/7 support, free access to product specialists, and an experienced staff at over 250 local branches. You want to call or click Grainger.com or just stop on by. Fabian, my man, all over the map there. But I notice I did give him some room. He was on a long leash today. All right, what I need to do, I want to talk about LaMarcus Aldridge, another really scary story. He announced his retirement abruptly. I want to get into that. I've got Landon Dickerson, an NFL draft prospect, coming up. That's in the last segment of the program. Let me give you a phone number. This is our voicemail number. This is the voicemail that you should call if you want to be a part of our podcast. 949-385-0447. 949-385-0447. Also, I do have some other things that I'm working on that I do not talk about on the program. But if you want to know about those other things, go to my Instagram feed. Exclusive content over there that I'm not talking about here, that I'm parking over there. Go to my Instagram feed at Jim Rome. Check out what I'm talking about. I think some of you would really get something out of it. I think you might like it. Instagram at Jim Rome. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
You're in a 5-minute...
For the ones who get it done, Grainger is offering supplies and solutions for every industry, backed by 24/7 support, free access to product specialists, and an experienced staff at over 250 local branches. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop on by. All right, so really quickly, I've got an interview coming up next segment. This is the last segment prior to that. You could get through right now. No waiting for the right call. 1-800-636-8686. A lot of you are trying to make some sense of what you just heard on the program. If you're looking for me to explain what just happened, I can't. Much like a pitcher throwing a no-hitter and not knowing exactly what happened in an interview afterwards. Like, yo, dude, what up? What happened? I don't know. Fabian happened. Brent in PC, quote, Fabian is the best. Carl, quote, is Fabian hammered? I don't know. I don't know, and I'm not going to say safe to assume either. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know if he was. I don't know if he wasn't. I don't know if Fabian has to blow into a breathalyzer in order to get his engine to turn over. I don't know. It wouldn't be fair for me to speculate. Daniel tweets, can somebody please translate that call from Fabian? I don't think. JP tweets, Fabian is 51? That is 51 hard-ass years, yo. I bet if you cut Fabian in half, there are at least 120 rings.
Yo.
Doggy Dog, did Fabian just say that he was 51 years old?
Doggy Dog.
How can you go over half of a century on this planet and still be like Fabian? Chris in Toronto, I don't know. Y'all are just asking questions to which I do not have the answer to or for. I don't know.
Fabian, Los Angeles, talk to me. What is on your mind?
Doggy Dog. I swear, Rome, it's the most... Oh, man. Okay.
That was the prototypical, classic, proverbial Fabian moment. The thing that pretty much kicked off the phenomenon that is Fabian, and it started way back when on the program. The OG flameout. That's when Fabian became Flamian, which was incredible jungle gloss at the time because, Alvin, of that call.
Fabian, Los Angeles, talk to me. What is on your mind?
Doggy Dog. I swear, Rome, it's the most... Oh, man. Okay.
I like the okay. Was that okay, I remembered what I was going to say? Or okay, I know the hammer's coming. Don't hit me with it. I can't really tell. One more time, Alvy.
Fabian, Los Angeles, talk to me. What is on your mind?
Doggy Dog. I swear, Rome, it's the most... Oh, man. Okay.
Okay, here's one difference between now and then. He was Fabian. He then became Flamian. Notice how quick that hammer came. That was not Alvin. That was Alvin's predecessor. That was the man that Alvin looked to, his mentor, his guru, the guy who taught Alvin everything he knows. Whitey. Brian Albers with the quick trigger. My man had an absolute zero tolerance policy. Look how hard and how swift and how punitive that justice was.
Fabian, Los Angeles, talk to me. What is on your mind?
Doggy Dog. I swear, Rome, it's the most... Oh, man. Okay.
Okay, compare that to how long Alvin let that guy go today. Had that phone not been clipped, or the quality, the connection not been as bad as it was, Alvin probably would still have Fabian going right now. Carl says, quote, Whitey would have run Fabian sooner than that today. Times change, man. Times change. It used to be a gnarly show back in the day, especially when Whitey sat the board. Plus, Alvin's been off for a year. Alvin came back. It's a Thursday for the first time in about a year. So he was in good spirits. All right, quickly, 1-800-636-8686. The Brooklyn Nets have been assembling the plane as it flies this year. It's the first season of Kyrie and KD together. Then they add James Harden. Then they start to add more pieces during the season. Now, however, one of those pieces is gone, and the reason is a total gut punch. LaMarcus Aldridge announced that he is retiring. He made the announcement this morning, and he's retiring due to a heart issue. Not he's out for a few games. He's done. He's done for the year. He's done for his career. He tweeted a letter which read in part, quote, "Today I write this letter with a heavy heart. My last game. I played while dealing with an irregular heartbeat. Later on that night, my rhythm got even worse, which really worried me even more." It goes on, quote, "The next morning, I told the team what was going on, and they were great getting me to the hospital and getting me checked out. Though I'm better now, what I felt with my heart that night was still one of the scariest things I've experienced. With that being said, I've made the difficult decision to retire from the NBA. For 15 years, I've put basketball first, and now it's time to put my health and my family first," end quote. Listen, if your immediate reaction to that news is to wonder what that means to the Nets championship hopes, to quote Rex Hudler, shake yourself.
Shake yourself.
I'd add to that, get over yourself. Look yourself in the mirror. I mean, that is scary. I can't imagine how scary that must have been. If he's calling it, quote, "one of the scariest things I've experienced," I mean, to me, even to read that back is actually pretty terrifying. I can't imagine what living with that must have been like. I'm glad, though, that he did live through it and that he's got more life ahead of him, because we've seen too many situations where guys try to push through a heart situation and the results are tragic. We've seen that. Unlike a knee or an ankle, you don't just tape that up. You don't just walk that off. Not when you're dealing with a heart issue. So on the one hand, his retirement is a complete and total shock, because he had just joined the Nets and had a really good look at the one thing he wanted so badly, a ring. On the other hand, this is not new. Mike Finger reminded everybody on Twitter this morning that Aldridge missed a few games back in 2017 with an irregular heartbeat. So obviously it's something he's been dealing with for a long time. Going back to his rookie year, when he was diagnosed with Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome. So the good thing is they caught it. He's taking the steps that he's taking right now. It sucks that it ends his career, but it's great that he can go on and enjoy the rest of his life. And I say that as somebody who has had him on this show numerous times over the years, and I have always enjoyed the conversations I had with LaMarcus.
All right, number three. What player have you enjoyed dunking on the most, and what player did you hate dunking on you the most?
This is hard to say, but the favorite player that I dunked on would be Tim Duncan off the rim. You know, he's, you know, one of my idols. So, you know, when I dunked on him, that was, you know, one of my best moments. And being dunked on, I would have to say my first year. Nene got me on the fast break. He was kind of chubby that year. I thought he couldn't jump. I didn't know him that well. It was on the fast break. You know, I thought I was going to block it, and he just dunked on me.
So we like, I can't believe it. That fat kid just threw down on me.
But I'm really good friends with him now, so I wouldn't, you know, call him chubby now. But back then, I didn't know him. I thought he couldn't jump. All of a sudden, he just jumped over me and just dunked on me.
LaMarcus Aldridge back in 2014 on our Showtime show. That's why you hear that audience. We had a live audience for that show. In fact, it's still mind-blowing to me that a week ago, as recently as a week ago, he had 22 points in 23 minutes against the Pelicans. And now he's done. And yes, he might not have been where he wanted to be defensively, but he was working his way into the team. He seemed to be finding a role, and that role was scoring. As Steve Jones Jr. tweeted, quote, "Any number of dribbles, turn right shoulder, fade away, LaMarcus was getting to that shoulder," end quote. Man, that is the truth, too. He was getting to that shoulder, and he was getting that bucket. Just over 2 years ago, he pumped in 56 for the Spurs against the Thunder, and he had this moment against the Mavs years ago as well.
And it's into Aldridge. Aldridge puts it on the floor for the win. LaMarcus Aldridge wins it in Dallas.
What I'm saying is, we're talking about a guy who averaged a hair under 20 and more than 8 boards per game and did it for 15 years. I mean, the guy was a monster. Those are monstrous numbers. That just does not happen. So if you want to focus on some of the things that he didn't do, you go ahead and do that. But that says more about you than it does him. If you want to know something about LaMarcus, check out this tweet from Jamal Crawford. Quote, "The realest I've ever met. We played together one season, and you would think we had known each other for decades. Your star stature never changed you. You never looked at yourself like that. You were just L.A. I always loved that about you, my brother for life," end quote. So he's retiring as a seven-time All-Star. He's Portland's all-time leading rebounder. And maybe most impressively, he's retiring as a five-time All-NBA selection. Five times. The same number as Clyde Drexler, Yao Ming, Chris Webber. More than Pau Gasol. More than Chris Mullin. More than Reggie Miller. Maybe that helps to put this in perspective. It's a hell of an achievement. Hell of a career. It sucks that it has to end this way, but nothing but respect for LaMarcus Aldridge. He was all class on and off the court. And that could have ended terribly. All right, when we come back, one last segment and a conversation with a former player from Alabama. In fact, a great, great player at Alabama. NFL draft prospect Landon Dickerson joins me next. And I may have time for a phone call also on the back end. First up, here is a sports update for you. Welcome back into our last segment of the Thursday edition of the program. I am live. I'm in Southern California. I am Jim Rome. What's cracking? As promised, we're joined right now by a former Alabama center, a national champion, winner of the Remington Trophy for the nation's top center, winner of the Jacobs Blocking Trophy, a first-team All-SEC player, an All-American. He's getting ready for the upcoming NFL draft, which gets underway on April 29th. Landon Dickerson is my guest. Landon, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing? I appreciate you having me on.
You know what? I appreciate you coming on, Landon. I got to ask you first. I've talked to so many draft prospects. I'm really curious. 2 weeks out, how does it sound and feel right about now? In other words, are you enjoying the time and the buildup to the draft? Or if you could, would you hit fast forward and just find out exactly where you're going to live and play right now?
You know, really, it's a balance of both of those. You know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime process, and, you know, I think a lot of people get caught up in the business side of it. It is something that, you know, should be enjoyed in the moment, and you really don't want to rush through it because you won't ever get to live it again. But, you know, also at the same time, you want to have a plan for your future and kind of, you know what team you're going to, know what city you're going to end up in. So, you know, I'm kind of balancing a fine line of, you know, appreciating the time I have and also kind of wondering, you know, where I'll end up being.
I think you nailed that. Landon Dickerson joining us. Speaking of nailing something, there was this incredible video from the Pro Day where Mac Jones is doing an interview, and you're in the background doing cartwheels, and you strung together five in a row, actually. What made you do that? And better yet, at your size, exactly how do you do that?
You know, really, it's honestly, you know, me and Mac are really good friends, and I always like to mess with him when he's doing interviews. You know, we've been on, you know, shows together. He's had interviews, messed with me, same thing. So, you know, it's just kind of, you know, I like to mess with my friends. So I figured that was a good opportunity to kind of catch him off guard and see how he likes to respond in the moment. So, you know, maybe it was a good learning point for some teams to see how he reacts to some unknowns. But, you know, honestly, it's just, you know, big guys are, you know, we play football, we're athletes too. So, now, we're able to do some things that people may not expect.
No doubt. Landon Dickerson joining us, no doubt. But then again, if people know your background, they would not be surprised. As an example, we know you can move. You earned a black belt in karate when you were 11. That made you the youngest person to earn that belt in your dojo. You were also an Eagle Scout. Like, you're making me feel really bad about me, my man. But overall, what was your life like when you were growing up?
I played a bunch of sports growing up, whether it was, you know, from Little League, baseball, soccer, basketball, football, karate. I did gymnastics for a while. It was kind of just depending on the time of year, was bouncing from, you know, with the rec field to, you know, a gymnasium, or going to, you know, basketball court, whatever it may have been. So, you know, I've always been into playing sports my entire life.
Landon Dickerson joining me. Listen, one thing to be big, another to be big and athletic, but when you started your career at Florida State, guys talk about how you look like a college offensive lineman from the very moment you arrived on campus. They also talked about the fact that you always wanted to take on the biggest guy. Where did that attitude come from?
I think it's just kind of my competitive nature. I mean, I've loved sports. I've loved being competitive all my life. So, you know, it's always, you know, I always like to challenge myself, you know, find the strongest guy, the fastest guy, whoever it may be, and then, you know, compete against them. I know I'm not going to win every single time, but it's just always that mindset, that growth mindset of always trying to be better and pushing yourself to, you know, sometimes you may be in a lift group where you're the strongest guy. Well, you know, go find somebody else who's stronger than you and, you know, push yourself to be stronger than them and just keep growing, keep getting better.
I love that notion of having a growth mindset. We talk about this quite a bit, but you seem to have figured that out at a pretty early age. Like, when did you first start thinking about the importance of having a growth mindset? Who put that thought in your head?
I think the biggest thing is you have to have an appreciation that, you know, we all have kind of an expiration date. You know, we have a finite amount of time on this earth, and, you know, nobody knows when that day is or when it's coming. So, you know, being able to get as much as you can out of life, I think that's just an important, you know, kind of ideology that I like to live by, is, you know, you want to kind of live every day and make the most of it, because you really don't know when that last day is coming.
It's a great mindset, a great point of view, but there's also all these great legends about you, like the fact that you build computers and 3D printers. Is this true? And what do you like about building computers?
Haven't really messed with building computers. I guess I won't get too technical, but the Arduino boards that go into 3D printers, it's kind of a, you know, micro computer, if you want to say. But, you know, really, I've always, rather than just computers, I've always been interested in, you know, taking things apart, finding out how they work, you know, what makes things tick, whether it is a computer or building a 3D printer or, you know, a vacuum or a, you know, some, you know, electrical tool or a part of my truck or anything like that. Just I find a lot of value in kind of knowing how things work. And, you know, it also does save me a little bit of money when it comes to things need to be fixed. I usually know how to fix them.
So good. Landon Dickerson joining us. You made my point for me. I always say this about offensive linemen, that generally you don't hear a lot of offensive linemen interviewed, but they're always good interviews when they do it, because it's such a technical position. You have to be smart to play that position. So inevitably, whenever I talk to a lineman on any level, they always come off well. Now, you mentioned your truck. I'm glad you brought that up. There's also the fact that the front bumper of your truck came off at one point, and you replaced it with a railroad tie. What was the thinking behind that move?
So, really, it was more of a budgetary thing at the time. You know, bumpers, any vehicle parts are really kind of expensive. So, you know, being on a college budget, a $12 piece of wood from Lowe's was going to have to suffice for the bumper temporarily until I could, you know, build up the money and budget for a new one. And actually, the bumper has been taken off since then, and we actually now have a regular bumper back on the truck.
It's the best. Landon Dickerson joining us. I think, as many people know, you suffered an ACL injury in the SEC championship game. When you put in all the work that you had put in, and you fought the way that you fought, battled the way you battled, I know that you understand that this is a part of the game, but how challenging was it to suffer that injury and know that you were not going to be able to compete in the playoffs at that time?
You know, it's something you have to acknowledge. Obviously, I've played football this long. I've been injured. I know, you know, you accept that whenever you choose to play this sport. So it's something that I know can happen. You know, it's not the best thing in the world, but I always think, you know, there's always a positive side to injuries, whether it's, you know, finding out that, you know, way you were training, maybe you weren't, you know, building muscle a certain way. Maybe you had a deficiency somewhere. You know, maybe it's just a lesson to learn from, you know, what, you know, how to overcome adversity, how, you know, where does your mind go whenever you get into a rough time. And there's always those good teaching moments for me. You know, but realizing I couldn't play, it wasn't a huge deal to me. I knew that, you know, the team that we had and the guys that were on that team, you know, it didn't matter if someone got hurt. The next guy was going to step up. Everybody on that team was going to do everything they could to help them and help the team succeed on the field. So, you know, I wasn't worried at all about how they were going to play or how they were going to do.
You know, I get that. Then on top of that, though, you still want to stay as close to your guys as you possibly could. So before the national championship game, you dress, you warm up, despite only being a few weeks removed from surgery. And then late in the game, you ask Nick Saban if you could just get into the game for a few snaps. How did that play out? And then what did it mean to be able to get into that game?
You know, I mean, kind of going back to the reasoning behind it, you know, at the time, I still wasn't sure if that was going to be my last game, you know, playing for the Crimson Tide. So, you know, not knowing that, I wanted to be able to go out there, you know, one last time, no matter if I was coming back or not, to really be out there and be with my team and that group of guys one last time, because, you know, any way you cut it, this team was special, and it's just something you don't see a whole lot of very often. So, you know, getting to be around them, getting to go through things and, you know, pregame warm-up, snapping, all that stuff, just to, you know, basically just kind of relive it one more time. You know, that was kind of my thought process. And also, you know, want to be out there and show those guys, you know, I may be a little beaten, banged up, but, you know, it's not going to stop me. So let's go play this game. And, you know, getting in at the end was, it was a tremendous thing for Coach Saban to let me do. You know, going in, taking the last snap and, you know, having that moment with all my teammates is just an amazing feeling.
Yeah, I'm just saying, from where I'm sitting, just watching that, I thought that was great. I thought that was awesome. You get on the field, you're hugging everybody in the huddle. I can only imagine what was said in the huddle. What about after the game? You carried Saban around the field. How did that come to be, and what did the coach make of that moment?
You know, Coach Saban really hadn't spoken much of it since then, but, you know, for us, it was a special moment for him. He's done, you know, words can't even describe how much he's done for the team, for me personally, and for, you know, the program at Alabama. He's accomplished so much in his time as a coach, and, you know, it was a great moment to kind of, you know, I've said that, you know, once you've accomplished so much in life, you probably should have people carry you around for a little bit. So, you know, that was just kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing, you know, went and carried him across, tried to find the other coach out there, but with a sea of players, it makes it a little difficult.
I think that's cool. How about a quick thought about Mac Jones, who you mentioned? You obviously played with him. What is a team going to get when they draft him? Like, what parts of his game make him special and unique?
Mac Jones, he's extremely talented, just, you know, kind of out of the box. But I think what's going to separate him in the long run is, you know, how much he loves the game, and he's just a student of the game. I mean, every aspect of, you know, whether it's, you know, formations, defensive coverages, what, you know, defensive linemen are doing, offensive schemes, you know, every single aspect of the game he loves to study, and he loves to try to, you know, take advantage of anything he can find. So, you know, with any NFL team that gets him is going to get a guy that I have no doubt is going to have a tremendous career and a long career.
Landon Dickerson joining us. The draft gets underway on April 29th. He was an All-American. He was a first-team All-SECer, a national champion, winner of the Jacobs Blocking Trophy, and the Remington Trophy for the nation's top center. Landon, great to get to know you. Great to have you on this show. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts, and I would love to do it again once you get settled in the NFL.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me on.
Yes, sir. Well done. Much respect. I'm blown away by guys like that. At that age, to have that kind of point of view and that kind of perspective, like, I don't have it now even. It's so impressive. And somebody else coming out of Alabama with amazing things to say about the experience and the program. Landon Dickerson, he is a monster now. Make no mistake, this guy is a monster. Gigantic, but athletic and nimble at the same time. Powerful, though, and agile. That is my draft prospectus. That's my take on him. And a great guy to talk to as well. The draft is coming up on April 29th, and it's my goal to interview everybody who gets drafted before the draft itself. I'm getting there, man. I'm close. This guy was a black belt at age 11 and an Eagle Scout. And he can put computers together. Remember that time that Brad in Corona came on and went in on Chael for being a purple belt?
Chael Sonnen is a purple belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. A purple belt. Dude knew he was going to fight people for a living, and he couldn't even be bothered to get a brown belt.
Yeah, but my man's a black belt in talking junk, though. Now we're done. The next generation of paint protection is here. New 303 graphene nano spray coating will provide up to 12 months of professional level protection, insane water beating, and jaw dropping shine with one simple application. Visit 303radio.com for more information. I'm done.